Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back for those of you, like myself, who haven't been here for 2 weeks. Has the world... Were you guys here at work last week?
Yes, Ed. Some of us had to be here.
We were here.
To carry on.
I missed you guys. I thought about you guys every day.
Mm-hmm. I bet you did.
I enjoyed it. I squirrel away vacation days, take the last 2 weeks of the year off. Although I was sick a little bit here this fall. Otherwise, I'd have been off today and tomorrow as well. I had to burn some of them, you know, for that.
We're glad you're here, Ed.
Yeah. I'm not sure the sincerity meter isn't exactly pegging out. But anyway, it is good to be back. It's kind of a little, not quite a skeleton crew here, but I came in at 7:30 this morning, and there was nobody here. And I actually did, I usually enter by where we have what's called data processing, all our fine ladies who, and it was all dark. And my first reaction was, wait, this is Monday, right?
Yeah.
You know, you ever thought about you go in the wrong day? And then I thought, what if I'm the only one who has to come in today? What if everyone else has got vacation days saved up?
If you thought today was slim, you should have been here Friday. I pulled in the parking lot at 7:45,
yeah,
and there was like one other car. I thought, did I miss the memo?
The memo
about being,
yeah,
off on Friday?
And yeah, that's right.
5 minutes later, people start wheeling in. But even then, it was only a handful of people.
Yeah. By the way, those voices, Fred Jackson and Walker Wildman. So anyway, we're back at it. We do have New Year's Day coming up this week, but 2020 is upon us. Brent Creeley is our producer. Brent, how many shopping days until Christmas?
Well, Ed, I think if you're still shot Christmas shopping, I think you're a little too late.
I'm talking about for 2020. No, I'm just kidding. I don't want to know.
It is going to be, 366 days in 2020? Because it's a leap year.
It is, okay.
2020 is a leap year.
366.
So you get an extra day of Christmas shopping.
Yes. people listening, they're going, they're groaning. I can hear them groaning from here. So, all right. So anyway, we start a new week, and most of us probably had a wonderful weekend at church, Fred, but some folks in Texas had a harrowing and horrifying day at church yesterday.
Yes, sir. Like a lot of churches, I think yesterday, the last Sunday of the year, where communion was being celebrated, and that was the case yesterday at the West Freeway Church of Christ in White Settlement, which is not far from Fort Worth, Texas.
Right.
And they were in the midst of that communion service when a man who is now being described by witnesses came in. He had looked like he had very long hair, a beard, but they looked false. And people were suspicious. And in the midst of that service, he opened fire. And two people died in that. But the story that's being talked about this morning as well is that that gunman was taken down very quickly. What I just described lasted all of 6 seconds.
Right.
This man opens fire, and he shoots first at one of the security staff that's at that church, and this is becoming one of the big parts of the story. They had a fully trained security armed team at that church. So he shot a deacon who had just helped him passing out communion, who passed away from his injuries. He shot and killed one of the first men who got up to and confront him with a gun. But then a retired FBI agent, who is also on their part of the security team at this church, took that gunman down.
Right.
And killed the gunman. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, there's certainly our sympathies go out to the families of the loved ones who were lost in the shooting, to that church. There is a video on YouTube you can watch because they were live streaming their service.
Right.
And you can see how quickly all of this happened. But today what's being talked about, too, once again, is the value of having a fully trained security team on your church. You know, it's church, I think, about 230 people, roughly, that were in the congregation yesterday. So not a big mega church, but they did have people trained and ready to defend the congregation. Yeah. And that's just the day and age in which we live.
Well, this is one of those cases where had you not had someone, they say a good guy with a gun, a good guy trained with a gun, then we could be looking at several more casualties, unfortunately.
Easily.
One's too many.
Yes.
But you could be seeing 5, 10, 15 people dead.
This guy would have kept shooting people until he ran out of ammunition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this was his intent, was to commit murder against innocent people.
Yeah.
You know, I generally don't watch these kinds of videos. I did watch this one. And people's first reaction is to get down.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so if nobody had confronted this man and taken him out, this man would have just walked around until people started to run. And and to your point, Fred, I know the church I go to, which I'm not going to name, we have very well-trained security teams. We do that here at AFA.
Yes.
And when we say trained, our people are trained by professionals,
right,
and go to firing ranges and those kind of things, because the world in which we live, post Family Research Council in 2012, where a guy went there to murder people.
Yeah, and one thing is, there's two different angles when it comes to laymen carrying guns. You have the people who don't want people carrying guns at all, which is the liberals. And then you have the people in law enforcement and some people who are professionals that kind of are a little shy about just anyone carrying a gun anywhere.
Right.
And I get that. My thing is, you have to be trained. And that's the case with any type of weapons or, you know, medical care, etc. You have to be trained, so you have to take it serious. But this church and others across the country do take it serious. They do send people to be trained, and in instances like this, that training pays off.
Well, they're also living in a state, thankfully, too, that is not adverse to this kind of training for churches,
right,
for people who go to church to be able to carry a weapon, and that certainly is the case in Texas. And Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick was talking about this. He held a news conference at the scene last evening, praising the heroes with guns who took down that shooter. Cut number 5.
This church had its own security team. They were well-trained. The heroism today is unparalleled. This team responded quickly, and within 6 seconds, the shooting was over. Two of the parishioners, who were volunteers on the security force, drew their weapons and took out the killer immediately, saving untold number of lives. Had the shooter been able to indiscriminately start firing into the parishioners sitting there in front of it, or at the pastor or whoever, we would have had many more lives lost today.
And I guess, you know, what the lieutenant governor is saying and what he's backing up there, I don't think any church across the country can have the attitude, well, we'll just hope for the best.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't anymore.
No.
That's,
you gotta be prepared.
That's the day and age in which we live.
You know what? Looking at a Fox News story on this shooting, the FBI special agent in charge, Matthew DeSarno, said, now I'm assuming we will find out more details about the gunman in the days to come, but FBI agent DeSarno said the gunman had been arrested multiple times in the past.
Yeah.
So multiple run-ins with law enforcement.
Yeah, so you sit there and you go, now how is this guy, I don't know what he was arrested for. I mean, maybe it was, you know, relatively minor instances, misdemeanors, what have you. But if this is an individual that we find out had been arrested numerous times on felony charges.
Well, there you go.
Then we sit there wondering, well, what's this guy doing out then?
Yeah.
You know, why is this guy free to roam amongst society? Now, don't get me wrong. If someone has been arrested for a felony and serves their time. Okay, I don't think that they should be punished for the rest of their lives. But if this is a person who's gotten all kinds of plea bargains, or they didn't press charges, or this or that, you sit there and you go, well, this is, we got these kind of people running around.
Yeah.
And not all of them, but some of them are very dangerous to society.
Yeah. Yeah, this fella, just from watching the video, I mean, he looks suspicious from afar. And the church members, they knew something was up. The security team knew something was up because they were closing in on him, if you will. And somehow he got a shotgun in the church. He managed to get in, and we saw this at Bellevue in Memphis several years ago, where a fella tried to bring in a backpack with a rifle in it. And thankfully they stopped him and the police arrested him. Mm-hmm. But one of the deacons who was shot here yesterday at this church, he was actually going for his gun. Mm-hmm. And when he was shot,
he was right next to the guy.
Yeah, he was a few feet away, and the guy pulled out the shotgun. And but yeah, you got to be on guard. That's for sure.
Well, I think it's going to get to the place where, and many churches do this already, no backpacks and no trench coats. Mm-hmm. Anything that you can hide, you know, a weapon in, you're just not going to be allowed. And that's sad. But it is the day and age in which we live.
Yeah,
you know, speaking of sadly, a very different response from well-known Texas Democrat Julian Castro. He pointed to the shooting as another horrific outcome due to lax gun laws and poor leadership. Here's a quote: "We can take steps to reduce this horrific attack. These horrific attacks right now. We just need our elected leaders to have the courage to act." More gun laws would not have stopped this man yesterday.
Is this the former San Antonio mayor who ran for president and dropped out?
Yes.
This man's an ignoramus.
Yeah.
All right. This guy, the gunman, used a shotgun.
Yeah.
And there is, as far as I know, not a single proposal from the left that would ban the possession of shotguns.
No.
Right.
All right. They're always going after, and I'm using air quotes here, the assault weapon, whatever in the world that means, okay? That's what they're usually talking about. This man had a shotgun. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll say, no handguns. Let's ban handguns, okay? This man had a shotgun. Anybody, who believes the Second Amendment means anything, at least is in agreement about we should have shotguns. So, Julian Castro, what exactly are you talking about?
Yeah, and this is the dangerous road that conservatives warn about, is because, you know, the Obama and others, they say, well, you know, you can keep your hunting rifles. Well, what if a hunting rifle is used to kill people? Well, then are we going to take that?
Right.
So without completely repealing the Second Amendment, there's no way to start implementing gun control laws that are going to prevent shootings like this. As you mentioned, this was a shotgun. So the best thing to do, you're not going to stop all evil. Only heart changes can do that. But the only thing you can do here is exactly what happened, and that is minimize damage by having armed security guards.
Yeah. Well, sad day. We ask people to continue to pray for the members of the West Freeway Church of Christ in White Settlement, Texas.
New York City, big story coming out of there over the last few days. There have been several attacks against mostly Orthodox Jews in that city on the street. The latest attack came Saturday evening at the home of a rabbi, where a guy goes into this house with a machete, not a gun, with a machete, and starts swinging at people. Five people in there injured at that home. But as I say, this is the latest in a string of attacks in New York City. And then we had that massacre at a kosher market across the river in New Jersey just last week. Again, Jewish people being targeted. Anti-Semitism, we've seen these reports coming out of places like France, other places in Europe, in Holland, and places like this. But now it's happening here on our own shores. And the thing is, it's what's amazing is in New York, de Blasio, the mayor there, he used it as an opportunity to criticize President Trump. President Trump is probably the most pro-Jewish president this country has had in years. And yet de Blasio, Democrat, tries to say, well, it's because of the kind of language that President Trump uses that's leading to the precipitation of attacks on Jewish people in New York. Now, that doesn't make any logical sense.
Yeah.
Only perhaps to a radical Democrat, left-wing Democrat like de Blasio.
Yeah. I've always been very hesitant to blame one person's actions on an entire political party or even a politician, because ultimately this sick guy who attacked this Jewish party on Saturday night, I mean, he's the one responsible. It's not even Cuomo's part. Now, let me say this. The policies can have an effect. I mean, if you have soft-on-crime policies and people like this, let's say he's had run-in with police and New York's laws let him out early or something like that, then you can start to say, well, maybe we should change the policies. But Democrat, Republican, Trump, whoever, Cuomo, it's no one's – they're not responsible for this man's actions. Mm-hmm. Definitely not President Trump.
Well, and let me – to your point about policies, I'm looking at a New York Post story. I had not seen this. This is not directly connected to the machete attack, but – here's what the New York Post says. Suspects arrested in last week's spree, an ad popped up here, sorry, of 8 anti-Semitic attacks are being quickly released right back into the neighborhoods they terrorized thanks to bail reform legislation, which doesn't even take effect until January 1. The most recent case of revolving door justice came Saturday morning, that's this weekend, with the release, with no bail, of a woman charged with punching and cursing at 3 Orthodox women at dawn the day before. So this is not the person who had the machete attack, but this is 8 additional cases in the last week of individuals being released. They weren't accused of murder,
right?
But their anti-Semitism had led to attacks. And they're right back out on the street. This is insanity.
Yeah.
In terms of, because we're just talking about the guy in Texas. We'll find out in the days to come what kind of run-ins did he have. FBI said he was arrested multiple times.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of thing we're starting to find out. And this is not going to go well with the socialist left as they increasingly demand reforms, prison reform.
Yeah.
And reform of the criminal justice system, which may need some reforms, but you can't let people back out on the street if they're arrested for assault.
Right.
You know, what's interesting in this, the stories this morning on this machete attack in New York, is, you know, the family is saying he has a long history of mental illness.
No.
Well, I'm sorry, I don't buy that. In these other incidents, you know, certainly in the massacre in New Jersey just last week, that was well thought out, well planned. You can't blame mental illness for all of this. So the question then becomes, what is leading to people just to walk up to a Jewish person on the street and beat them up or, you know, try to do physical damage to them? I mean, that's another example of just evil.
Right.
These people haven't done anything personally to you, but you have it in your heart to go. So what's behind this? I mean, we're running into problems now in this country with on our university campuses, advocating the BDS movement, boycott, divest, sanction movement, all of these kinds
against
of things.
Against Israel.
Against Israel. You have the movement by the Trump administration just in the last couple of weeks to punish schools who are using taxpayers' money to bring in anti-Israel groups on campus. I mean, we've got a problem that's developing in this country that we've only seen in Europe and in the Muslim world. Now it's landed on our shores. And so what's allowing for this? I think that's a question that has to be asked.
Well, one of the biggest drivers of anti-Semitism is Islamic. Is Muslims.
Yes.
Because their ideology teaches that the infidel, not just Jews, but also Christians and any other faith, any other non-Islamic faiths, are they're infidels too. But one of the key drivers is the Muslim faith. And what you'll find here is not all of the time, But most of the time, these people that do these attacks on Jews are Muslims themselves. And a lot of the anti-Semitic rhetoric you're getting out of Washington, D.C. is coming from congresswomen that are Muslims, like Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and others. And you get some from non-Muslims like AOC and others. But the driver, the common factor here is that, and you see it in Israel with Hamas and Iran and others, but the Muslim faith is driving a lot of the anti-Semitism.
Well, and let me just say this, in terms of the excuse of mental illness. Now, in my opinion, I'm not a professional, but in my opinion, nobody is potentially excused from the crimes they commit unless they are howling at the moon crazy. That's what I always call it. Okay, howling at the moon. Hey, listen, I'm a vampire or a werewolf. Okay, people who are actually delusional. Okay, but what we're seeing here is the attempt to explain evil as being mental illness, because the scientific community, like the American Psychiatric Association or the American Psychological Association, they don't believe in a soul. All right, so they have to find some explanation for what we consider to be and know to be spiritual evil, of the heart and of the soul, and all they've got is mentally disturbed, mentally deranged.
That's their version of evil.
That's got to be something. It's got to be a chemical imbalance.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, the only ones who should even be allowed to go there in terms of that explanation are the howl at the moon kind of people.
Yeah, and also we have people saying that he's got a mental illness. And he just got arrested. Like, I want a psychiatrist to do a. It takes like weeks to do an official exam to declare someone crazy. And here they are the day after, 2 days after, saying he's mentally unstable. Well, how do you know that?
Right.
You know, just because.
Great point.
I mean, we can't just start slapping mentally ill on everybody who does evil, because then they're going to take that into court and go, well, he just needs to be let off because he's mentally unstable.
Yeah, or we'll put him in a psychiatric ward for 30 days. And then we'll, quote-unquote, treat him and then release him back onto the street. Exactly. Well, you've got nowhere to go if you deny the existence of God, if you deny the soul, the existence of the soul, or the reality of spiritual evil. You've got nowhere else to go except this kind of physical explanation, chemical imbalance. You got nothing else.
Yeah.
What else do you say?
At the heart of all this, I think we all know, is a spiritual problem that's going on. And Alveda King was on Fox and Friends this morning talking about this. And what she says is she believes is the solution to all of this. Cut number three.
When you have this terror, this confusion, where there's envy and strife, there's confusion in every evil work. So we need to balance ourselves, to pray for those who have been attacked. And, you know, I wouldn't be Alveda King, the evangelist, if I didn't even mention the babies in the womb who are under attack as well. So we are under attack here in America and around the world. Our faith is under attack. So we have to come together in prayer and love, and to love each other regardless of skin color, religious affiliations, and all of that.
That's true, but we also have to be able to protect ourselves against evil.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a balance to all of this.
Sure.
Right. She's hitting the spiritual aspect of this. Mm. We also need to be as wise as serpents, and that means, hey, lock your doors.
Yeah.
Lock your car doors. Mm-hmm. If you can, have trained professionals in your church, and you got to be aware when you walk out of the store who's hanging around in the parking lot. All those are things that you have to do that are wisdom, and I don't think God is opposed to that at all. In fact, he calls us to walk wise, have an entire book of Proverbs dedicated to wisdom. All right, folks, we're going to take a two-minute break. We will be back for more of today's issues here on Monday, December 30th. We'll be right back.
On the next Today's Issues, we'll talk with Dr. Frank Turek.
The Bible is all about crime. The C stands for creation. The R stands for rebellion. The I stands for intervention, the intervention of God Himself. The M stands for mission, and the E stands for eternity.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central, on American Family Radio.
You know, most tours of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., don't include the spiritual heritage of our country, the Christian history of our nation, the people, the places, the events that God used to birth America. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. My friend, historian Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation, goes with us on these tours, and he talks all along the way. He tells you about the people, the places, the events, and he does so from a Christian perspective. So you're invited to join us on one of these spiritual heritage tours in 2020 in June and September. We also go to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour if you want to do that as well. So for all the information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, simply the website spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and folks, Liberty University believes a private Christian education should be affordable to everyone. That's great, right? It doesn't matter if you're from California or Maine or anywhere in between, you may qualify for up to $20,780 over 4 years through Liberty's Middle America Scholarship. For more information, text MAS to the number 839-858 today. Again, that's MAS to the number 839-858. Stanford Law School professor Pamela Carland is facing fierce outrage after she dragged President Trump's 13-year-old son into the House impeachment hearings. Ms. Carland later apologized for making a crass joke about the president turning his son Barron into a baron. White House spokesperson Stephanie Grisham blasted Ms. Carland, calling her remarks classless, as did Melania Trump, Barron's mother. It really is beyond outrageous that Democrats would use a teenage boy as a punchline for a joke. During the Obama administration, the mainstream media and both political parties honored a long-standing tradition: the kids are off limits. But that has not been the case with the Trump's little boy, the subject of hateful screeds from Hollywood and the left. Kayleigh McEnany called on every Democrat in Congress to repudiate Ms. Carland's remarks, but so far not a single Democrat has done so. That says a lot about the moral character of Democrats, or the lack thereof. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano, your host, joined by Fred Jackson, news director for One News Now, and Walker Wildman, vice president of operations here at American Family Association. Well, we have a special guest, Paul Kengor, who is a professor of political science at Grove City College in Grove City, Pennsylvania. I've heard nothing but good things about Grove City College. I think we've had a faculty member or two on the show periodically, but we wanted to have Professor Kengor on for an article that he wrote. It was posted in the American Spectator on November 28th, it is now on our Facebook page for Today's Issues. It's called, titled, Mayor Pete's Rainbow Army: College Kids Know Who They're Going to Work For and Why. And so, Paul, welcome. I think we may have had you on the show before. I'm not sure, but welcome to Today's Issues.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Yeah, I've been with you guys before, at least probably a handful of times over the years.
Well, you've anytime I find your stuff, sometimes I think your stuff might appear in First Things or Crisis Magazine. Anytime I see something that you have written, I always am drawn to it. You are a brilliant analyst of what's happening in our culture. So I wanted to have you on the show today to talk about this article, because It's not just about the young people who are gravitating to and supporting Pete Buttigieg, who is the Indiana mayor from South Bend, who is running for president. It does have, your article does have something to do with that, but it has a wider application to what's happening to young people. You start off with a story of a young lady who's a solid evangelical from a Christian family, grew up in church, who was actually going to spend vacation time helping Mayor Pete run for president. How did this happen?
Well, that's right. In fact, my friend Jeff, he's the guilty culprit, unnamed in the article. But he told me, he said, let me tell you about this girl. She was valedictorian of our classical Christian school. Went to our church, and he said, guess what she did for spring break or for break? I guess it would have been fall break. Yeah, fall break. Guess what she did for fall break? And he said she headed to Iowa to volunteer for Mayor Pete's presidential campaign. And I wasn't surprised because I knew where she was. She had gone off to an elite university in the Northeast, Ivy League school. And, you know, I got to tell you guys, and you know this, you guys probably know this very well, but all it takes is two or three semesters at these colleges to, you know, to borrow the language of Barack Obama, to fundamentally transform somebody who you thought was a solid, you know, Bible-believing evangelical kid into a pro-choice LGBTQ crusading leftist. And that's exactly what happened to this girl, to the point where she dropped everything during fall break and probably on her parents' dime, hopped a plane and headed off to Iowa and went there and volunteered for Pete Buttigieg's presidential campaign. And why? Well, because he's, you know, quote unquote gay, because he's homosexual, because he's a man married to another man. And that's the primary reason why she and others like her are campaigning for him, because, you know, they want a gay married man to be president of the United States.
Well, and
that's his appeal to them.
And you make the point in this article. Again, this is posted, folks, on our Facebook page for Today's Issues. You make the point that college students in 2008 wanted Barack Obama to be president because, first and foremost, he's African-American. 2016, college students wanted Hillary Clinton to be president because, first and foremost, she's a woman. And now in 2020, college students want Pete Buttigieg to be president because, first and foremost, he's homosexual. But from a Christian perspective, all three of these individuals, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Pete Buttigieg, are radical leftists, and their policies are such that no Christians, in my opinion, should support these individuals to lead our nation. But you take a Christian. Now, this girl, this college student, does she still remain or claim to be Christian?
Well, it's a good question. And in fact, I said pro-choice, and when I said that, I probably should have held back because I don't know about her abortion point of view. One slightly redeeming thing in all of this, Ed, is that I have noticed that a lot of evangelical kids, a lot of good Christian kids, are remaining sort of pro-life, although a lot of them end up going off to college and supporting Planned Parenthood and all that stuff, too. But on issues of race, gender, and sexual identity, and that's what you have there with Obama in 2008, it was race. You know, Hillary Clinton in 2016, it was gender. And Pete Buttigieg in 2020, it's sexual identity, that they are getting a steady, force-fed diet of that at the universities. And these universities, these campuses, that race, gender, and sexual orientation, that's the alpha and the omega. For them, you know, that is the altar that they bow before, that they genuflect before, that's their golden calf. That is it. There's nothing more important to them than race, gender, and sexual orientation. So it is not a surprise. If you send people listening, please, it's Christmas time, all right? It's Christmas break. Understand this. No matter how solid you think little Susie or little Jimmy might be, as currently a high school sophomore or junior or senior, I'm telling you, I'm a college professor. I see this over and over and over again. You could have a kid who is such a solid, Bible-believing kid, and it only takes one, two, or three semesters where they are so completely overwhelmed at a secular university that they completely flip within a year or two. And you think it won't happen to your kid? The chances are it will, which is why, and this is going to sound like an ad for my college, Grove City College, but it could be for any number of, well, not a large number, but maybe a couple dozen colleges around the country. Be really, 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 really careful about where you send your kid to school. And because you're going to not only send them somewhere where they completely flip and change the views they've had that you've inculcated them with for 18 years, but you're going to be paying for that change, wow, for that indoctrination. And that's what happened to this girl, who is, you know, unfortunately, an all too typical story.
Paul, this is Walker here. One of the most baffling things to me about this entire situation and this campaign for 2020 is that Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, other than being the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and some argue about how good of a mayor he is, there's really nothing else on his resume.
That's right. Yeah,
there's no.
Yeah, that's right, Walker. I mean, he's really not qualified at all. He's the mayor of South Bend.
Yeah, but
To
your point in this article, I guess this is the point I'm trying to make, is that without him being identifying as homosexual, which is the hip new cool thing to do, especially for the young crowd, what you're talking about, without that, he really has nothing to boost him. Because that's what he's running on, and he may not say it, but all the support he's getting is from people who like him because he's homosexual.
Well, that's right. And to take an even deeper dive into this, he couches not only his sexual orientation, but you know, his sexual choice, his sexual preference, even his same-sex, quote-unquote, marriage. He couches that in the Christian gospel, mm-hmm, right? I mean, he's walking around more than any other Democrat. He's speaking faith on the campaign trail. He was campaigning in one or two African American churches over the last few weeks, and so for a young lady like the lady that I'm writing about in this American Spectator piece, who was raised an evangelical Christian, from what I know about her, not knowing her well, but I my understanding is that she's still a Christian. She's still a believer. She did not become an atheist, but she has become a left of center, left wing, LGBTQ crusading, whatever young person. And so to have somebody like Pete Buttigieg couch his language and his beliefs and his behavior in evangelical terms is even more appealing to her. So in a way, Buttigieg is going to be picking up votes not only from the hardcore atheistic, agnostic, secular left, but even among many young liberal, left-leaning evangelicals, which is probably where she is. And that's, I think, an added force that's contributing to where he is in the polls, which I must say here, I go through the data in the American Spectator piece, he's polling number one in Iowa. He is. I didn't check Real Clear Politics this morning, but he's been number one in Iowa for about 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. He was number one in New Hampshire. I think he's now number two in New Hampshire. If he's number three, it's not by much. New Hampshire's like 20, 19, 18 percent. It's very, very close. And in the Real Clear Politics average, he was even leading Donald Trump 47 to 44% a few weeks ago. So if enough of these young college kids fly out there during Christmas break and get them enough votes in Iowa and New Hampshire, it's quite possible he could end up getting the Democratic Party nomination. And if he gets it, Democrats today, the party of the Teamsters and the coal miners and Jack Kennedy and Harry Truman, they'll dominate him. They'll vote for him. And it's something that was inconceivable to all of us maybe 5-10 years ago, that you could have a gay married man married to another man as president of the United States, is actually, I think, now quite possible in modern America. That's how much we've changed.
Paul, it's Fred here. Over the last half hour of this program, we talked about what happened at the church in Texas this weekend and the anti-Semitism in New York. And we said that's basically a spiritual problem that's behind this. The inability of people to recognize that there are people with evil hearts out there. Now we come to this story. where do you see the spiritual aspect in this? The Bible is clear that homosexuality is a sin. So how, with a young lady, the example that you've given us, a young lady grown up in an evangelical church, evangelical family, how is it at some point that she has to transition from believing in the Bible being God's word, to no, the Bible is trumped by what my professor is saying? So there's the spiritual problem that I'm seeing in this, is that never being grounded in the authority of Scripture and what the Bible is, and the Bible is God's word.
Yeah, I know, Fred. It's quite daunting, and it's really quite insidious too. That the one guy on the Democratic side who's openly talking about faith is talking about it in a way in order to try to make his same-sex marriage attractive, right? And you know, it reminds me of Barack Obama, and Obama was in, I think, United Church of Christ was the Reverend Jeremiah Wright's church, and Obama talked about, oh well, of course I support same-sex marriage because I believe in the golden rule, right? Mm. And Nancy Pelosi, who's Roman Catholic, right, saying, well, of course I believe in same-sex marriage because my faith teaches love. My faith teaches tolerance. Jimmy Carter, right? Jimmy Carter, who was, Southern Baptist? So I'm picking people from all over the map here, faith-wise. Likewise saying that he sees no prohibition in Scripture that directly says that a man can't marry another man, which would be something like saying, well, there's nothing in Scripture that says you can't smoke marijuana, right? Or that you can't use drugs just because it's not stated there explicitly, then therefore it's okay. But it shows what a lot of kind of modern day leftist Christians like Pete Buttigieg are doing, which is they're using the tolerance, love aspect of the gospel, right, to try to trump everything else that's said anywhere in the New Testament or Old Testament, right? Yeah. The Christian faith teaches love. Well, what would Jesus do? Well, Jesus would love, right? He would embrace his neighbor. Say, yeah, but you got to read the whole thing, right? It also says not to do this and not to do that. No. To me, it's just about love. It's just about love. So you combine that, which is happening among some social justice, religious left Christians, and then what the young lady is hearing from her secular left agnostic professors who are pushing this race, gender, sexual orientation stuff, and altogether it combines here for, I think, this pretty toxic confluence that is producing a generation of young people who, citing their Christian faith, are willing to go out and campaign for people like Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah. Yeah, and Paul, you hit the nail on the head there. The left has won on the argument on tying love to one's behavior. And if for some reason, if you don't approve of someone's behavior or think that certain behavior is wrong or immoral, then you don't love that person. By them tying that together, and the funny thing is, we don't do that with anything else. We don't go, well, you know, if you're against murder, then you don't love murderers, you know. So we don't do that with anything else except this one issue of human sexuality. And if you buy into that lie that somehow you don't love someone if you don't like their behavior, if you buy into that, then you really neuter yourself from having any kind of biblical belief on anything when it comes to human sexuality.
Well, that's right, and also with other forms of sexual sin, right? If there's a member of our church, of our congregation, who is committing adultery, we don't all say, well, we need to embrace him and love him and tolerate this because, you know, he's just inclined to wanting to be with other women other than his wife, right? No, we condemn it. And also we try to intervene to stop him, to help him. We don't condemn him to hell, but we tell him to stop the behavior that he's engaging in because it's sinful, right? We don't hesitate to do that.
Yeah.
And you know, but here, you know, they're going to make an exception in this case because I think they've bought into the whole university mindset that you know, the modern quote-unquote LGBTQ movement is an entirely new civil rights movement, minority movement. Hmm. And they're at the point now, it's not just a matter of tolerance, but acceptance and even approval. And for those of us, and I got to warn you three now and others listening, and you guys have probably already seen this, imagine if someone like Pete Buttigieg does get the nomination for the Democrats. They'll start coming up to guys like us and saying, do you think that the fact that he's married to a man and a homosexual, do you think Paul Kengor, Ed, right, do you guys think that this should disqualify him from being president of the United States? Right? And they're going to expect from us to say, well, I do think it disqualifies them because, you know, to me, morality matters and so forth. And if they say that, if you say that, if we give that answer, they're going to absolutely demonize us in the public eye. And that's coming, right? That question is going to be asked very, very soon. I'm surprised it's not getting asked yet.
Yeah,
they're waiting on him to get the nomination first before they start pulling out that card.
That's right. They'll start pulling out that card.
Yep.
Our guest has been Paul Kengor. He's professor of political science at Grove City College in Grove City, Pennsylvania. Paul, before we let you go, let our listeners know where they can maybe access some of your writings and also give them a website for Grove City College.
No, well, thanks. Yeah, so I write for the American Spectator, which is simply spectator.org, and at Grove City College, which is a true Christian college. I'm the longtime executive director of our Institute for Faith and Freedom. So if you type in Grove City College, Institute for Faith and Freedom, you can find a lot of materials and articles like this posted there as well.
All right, Paul, great work. Thank you for all that you do. And tip of the hat to Grove City College and the other colleges and universities that are, and as you said, that number is shrinking, sadly.
Not many.
Remain true and faithful to the gospel. Thank you, Paul, for being with us.
Thanks, guys. God bless.
That's Paul Kengor, again, professor of political science at Grove City College. His article, Mayor Pete's Rainbow Army, has been posted to our Facebook page. By the way, it's a little late to be letting you know, but you can go to Facebook or YouTube and search for Today's Issues and click through, and you can actually watch us live stream the video version of this program. So, all right, Fred, what else we got? We got several minutes here before the top of the hour.
Well, I was just thinking along what we were just talking with our guest. I think more and more parents are realizing that schools are not in the and colleges are not in the education business anymore. They're in the indoctrination business.
Right.
And there's a huge difference. Education supposedly deals with the facts, you know, science, math, et cetera, et cetera.
And teaching kids how to think.
Indoctrination is telling them what to think.
Right.
That in order to be acceptable in society, you must think this way. And if you don't, there is something wrong with you.
Right.
And our guest is saying, we have Christians, conservative Christian parents, that are paying these schools to attack what you have taught them for the last 12 years that they've been in your house.
That's insane when you think about it, isn't it?
Think about this.
Yes. Let me pay you to drag my kid's soul to hell.
Yes, and to doubt everything that I've taught them for the last 12 years, and I'm going to pay you to do it. I mean, when you talk about, you know, every penny that's supposed to be in our wallets and bank accounts belongs to God.
Right.
We say that. Mm-hmm. And we're taking that money that God has given us as a gift. And we're paying it to these colleges to undermine everything that the Bible teaches.
Well, and let me tell you something else, too, what Paul Kengor was just saying. Now, he teaches at Grove City College. There are other fine colleges and universities, Hillsdale College. There's some good ones out there, okay? But make no mistake, the handfuls that exist, they're going to be targeted.
Yes.
If the progressives take over White House, both houses of college, they are taking over some state legislatures. Look, what do they do? Like in California, for example, when they take power, they target schools like that. Mm-hmm. Now, some of these colleges, I'm not sure about Grove City College, but I know Hillsdale, takes no federal money because they don't want the federal government telling them they must deny their core Christian beliefs if they want to get money. But some of these kids go, you know, I gotta borrow federal money. If that is a link to these schools, they're going to go after these colleges to try to force them to capitulate. There is a spiritual war in this country, and those kind of conflicts are on the horizon. So even those colleges that want to remain faithful and teach the truth, they have a target on their backs.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just colleges and universities, but in California, to undermine authority, there's now a law that's going to take effect on Wednesday, January 1st, 2020. Are you ready for this? California public schools will not be able to suspend students for disobeying teachers. You're not going to be able to suspend them.
Yeah.
So that teacher, that student can get up in class, can curse and swear and undermine and say, I'm not going to do anything you tell me to do. And that teacher, that school now, by law, by state law, is going to be able, not going to be able to do anything with that student.
Because suspension is kind of like the big club.
Okay? Yes.
So I don't know what schools do in California, if they give demerits or detentions. I don't know. In school suspension, who knows? But they cannot be suspended if they're causing chaos in California schools.
Yeah.
This is part of the insanity of the left.
Yeah. And well, they're putting this in levels. It starts off on Wednesday this week for students in first through fifth grade. We're talking 6 and 7 and 8 year olds.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, these type policies work directly against the education system because you've already got broken homes, no dads at home, no disciplinary structure. I'm talking generally here. And then you send the kids go to school, and then you're tearing down the structure that they have at school, the disciplinary structure. And you talk to teachers where they take corporal punishment, which is paddling. When you take that out of a school, it completely disables teachers and principals' abilities to effectively discipline. Because if students know that the worst thing I'm going to get is a red light on my board, then what's that? Now, I understand that's effective at kindergarten when kids are very impressionable. But when you got a 7-year-old, 8-year-old, 9-year-old, and the worst thing that's going to happen to them is a red light, you're going to send them home with a little slip that says you've been bad today, then it works completely against the education system, and it creates chaos in the classrooms.
Well, it creates chaos in our culture because these kids grow up saying, I can get away with anything without being punished. How is he going to treat a police officer?
If you talk to schools who still have paddling when the parents can opt in to have their students disciplined at school and paddled, you talk to those principals and those teachers, and they will say that kids act better.
Yeah.
If they think that the principal is about to pull them out and give them a paddle.
There's
got to be consequences. This goes back to what we were talking about New York City with the bail situation for these individuals who were terrorizing some of these Jews in the neighborhoods, let out without bail.
Yeah, and they know that.
Yeah. All right, folks. Fred, thank you.
You're welcome.
We're going to take a 5-minute break for news, and we'll come back with Steve Jordahl and more of what's happening both here and abroad. Please come back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.